Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special episode of TFL Talking Cars, and today we are going to be talking off-roaders, because with me I have a special guest. His name is Justin King. And Justin, thank you for coming on this podcast.
Absolutely.
And Justin is the head of PR for Colorado 4x4 Off-Road and Recovery. And so we are going to be talking about, off-roading and what happens when things go wrong, right?
Yep, we sure are.
And if you guys want to meet Justin in a more personal manner, you can go over to TFL Off-Road, where we just took the Bronco and his Jeep Wrangler wheeling up Miller Rock. So, man, thank you very much for taking us up Miller Rock with your buddy and then taking us down to the river. That was quite the video.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a ton of fun.
Yeah. Before we get into kind of, you know, what you guys do, recovering and rescuing people here in Colorado, Justin, I want to talk about your rig because it's interesting. So you've got a Wrangler JL.
Yep.
And tell me about the lift on that.
Yeah, so it's a 2018 JL Rubicon, and it's just got the Mopar 2-inch like dealer installed or factory installed lift on it.
But it didn't go according to plan, did it?
No, it did not. So I've only had the Jeep for like 2.5 years, even though it's an 18. I bought it, you know, early 19. And it came, you know, as equipped. And at about 12,000 miles on the odometer, I started noticing death wobble symptoms.
Yeah.
Just, you know, slight vibrations in the steering wheel and things like that when you'd hit bumps, that not completely uncommon for a solid axle vehicle, but they started getting worse and worse and worse as time went on, until about 12,500 miles, full-on uncontrollable death wobble.
Yeah, so for those of you guys who aren't familiar with death wobble, it affects vehicles with solid axles more than independent suspension. And basically what happens is, and I got to tell you, I had the worst case of that. We had an old Comanche that we purchased, and I was going down the diagonal heading back to Boulder after we purchased it. Mm-hmm. And I thought there was an earthquake. It gets that bad. You're going down the highway at like 55, 65, and all of a sudden the front wheels start to shake back and forth, and the wheel starts to shake back and forth, and it just gets this resonance frequency where you feel like you're going to lose control. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I've experienced the death wobble on all three Jeeps that I've had.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I kind of knew that it was coming. I was just waiting for it to get to full on, like, now something is actually detectably loose, and then I could diagnose and get it fixed.
So before we get into all the interesting recoveries that you guys have done over the years, tell me what you did. So you've got this death wobble in this brand new Jeep with the Mopar lift.
Yep.
Hopefully you took it to the dealer and they said, they didn't say what a lot of people say, which is you're crazy.
Yeah. So I've got a really good relationship with a dealer in Wyoming. And I dropped him a email with a video link just showing how much play there was in the drag link going down from the string box. And they said, yeah, we'll get that part ordered. I verified that it was really under warranty, since I'm not hard on it, but I definitely drive it off-road.
Yeah, but that's what it's meant for.
Yeah, I mean, it's what it's meant for. And they said, yeah, it's under warranty, no problem. Get it up here. And then when they put it on the rack, they found that basically the entire front end was loose.
Hmm.
It wasn't just the drag link. It was the tie rod ends were shot more than I could diagnose on the ground. And the, I forgot the name of that bar. The track bar.
Oh, track
the
bar.
Track bar, excuse me. Yeah, so the track bar bushings were totally shot. So, yeah.
So what did they do? Did they replace it all?
They did. They ended up replacing it all. They had the drag link in stock when I got there and basically said, you know, like, we can't just put this on here because this isn't going to fix the problem.
Yeah.
So they ordered in all the parts that they needed, and about 4 or 5 days later, it all came in and they fixed it up, and it's driving fine ever since.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was a whole, you know, with the exception of the control arm bushings, all that steering related, it all had to be replaced.
Yeah, basically so. What happens is there's slop, right? It gets into the solid axle and the way that it connects to the steering box, and then you've set up this resonance frequency and the wheel starts to wobble, and it's no good.
Yeah, I was setting it off at anywhere from 30 miles an hour to 70.
Yeah.
I could set off death wobble going over the train tracks in town.
Yeah, it's, you know, so. Over the years, it's the one thing that a lot of people have written us about, because when it happens to you for the first time, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's not just Jeeps. It's, you know, anything with solid axles. So heavy-duty trucks often have it.
Yep.
And so it's a relatively common problem. So I'm glad you got it fixed. I'm glad the dealer and the manufacturer did the right thing.
Yep.
And if you want to see Justin's Jeep, head on over to that off-road video. It's up. The thumbnail is the Wrangler, his Wrangler, his buddy's Wrangler, and, of course, our Bronco, and we go up to Miller Rock, which is a really interesting trail that stayed open late this year because we've had very little snow.
Yeah, I think you can still get to it.
Yeah, today. Yeah. So if you wanted to go out there, you could still do it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if you're looking for where it is, use our friends at Onyx Off Road. Go to Edward, the little town, and check out Miller Rock on Onyx Off Road, and they rate the trail, and you can actually check out how to get to it. So. Yeah, that's a freebie for Onyx. All right, so tell me about Colorado 4x4 Rescue and Recovery, Justin. Tell me about the organization. How did it get started?
Yeah, so Colorado 4x4, the concept for the organization, that was born in August of 2014. I mean, this has been going on for, you know, longer than that, but basically some folks had to leave a vehicle on Red Cone. Just like you had to do with that Defender.
Yes.
And when you did that, this popped into my mind. So some folks had to leave a vehicle up on Red Cone. So I don't know if it was just flat tires. I don't remember the exact.
That's what happened to us. If you haven't seen the video, we took a Wrangler, the Defender, and the Bronco up and over Red Cone, and we got kind of past what I call it. It's not officially the gatekeeper, but there is a little gatekeeper.
Yeah, there is a bit of a gatekeeper.
And then we started going up that kind of steep hill, and because of the way of the trail is, we had to go up and over rock, and because of the fact that Defender had 20s on it,
yep,
I blew the sidewall. We swapped out
a couple of times.
Yeah, we swapped out the spare, and then Tommy blew the sidewall, and then we were done.
Yep. So
you know what? It's not a good feeling leaving like a $70,000 brand new Defender.
Right.
And I was thinking about that. I was thinking, I wonder if this thing's going to be fine, because a lot of people, especially on the weekends, right? That's a pretty busy trail.
Yes. And I'm assuming you were up there on a weekday.
It was like a Friday, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, you know, usually speaking, you're okay. Yeah. On most of the time, you're okay anyway.
So what do they do with this vehicle?
I don't have all that, like, exactly what happened. I just know it had been vandalized. I don't think they broke windows, but it's really common for us to find vehicles that have sat for a few days that have slashed tires or broken windows or bullet holes in them, because
that's what people do, it's
a shame, it's ridiculous. But so this concept for this organization was born after that. Those folks had, you know, they'd put it out there on social media that their vehicle had been vandalized on Red Cone, so there was this need for some kind of team group folks that were willing to go help people, you know, in their time of need off-road. And generally speaking, off-roaders are outgoing like that. They'll help anybody. Anytime I've ever come up on anybody on a trail that's needed help, prior even to being involved with the org, you know, we stop and help them. You want to get them off the trail.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about it, so you're kind of in the worst possible place,
right?
At a very kind of exposed altitude.
Yep.
Potentially weather's moving in.
Yes.
And it could be terrifying. So obviously, if you've done the right thing and you have your buddies along, you yourself are going to be okay, but then you start to worry about the vehicle. And in other places, you know, like Utah comes to mind, there are services that you can use, which are very expensive,
yeah,
to actually go and rescue you. Do like professional services like that exist here in Colorado?
There are a few towing companies that are actually set up for like off-road recovery and towing. There's quite a, or well, I shouldn't say quite a few. There's a couple down towards Colorado Springs area.
Okay.
And I know that there's also one, I can't remember the name of the company, but I believe he's on the West Slope closer to Grand Junction area.
Yep.
So there are some of those that exist out there.
And I assume they're pretty expensive.
Yeah, I would assume. I've never personally been in a situation where I've needed a professional service like that.
And I don't think like AAA covers that. I think specifically AAA doesn't cover you when you're...
I don't think they do.
Yeah, I think you're kind of on your own. Yeah. And then you're at the mercy of whoever goes and recovers you. And the great thing about what you guys do is that you're a nonprofit.
Correct.
And you're a bunch of volunteers. And you guys do this, you know, as a community service, which I think is incredible.
Yep. Yeah, we became a nonprofit in the fall of 2016. And that's kind of what kicked this organization into its legitimate, official, like it's a state-recognized search and rescue and off-road recovery team.
So before we get into kind of the more interesting ones that you've been involved in, tell me how this works. So I'm out there, let's say I'm on Red Cone, like I was, and we leave the Defender there. And, you know, we have resources, obviously, so that we can actually come and go get it, right?
Right.
We've got a full
set of
guys, and you know, we can sort it out ourselves. But let's say it was just, you know, a normal person that didn't have those resources. How would they get themselves off the mountain with you guys?
So, shockingly enough, with the advances in cellular technology, there's a lot of places in the mountains that if you can just get up a few hundred more feet, you have
full cell service.
4G and 5G.
Yeah.
So you actually can just call our dispatch number, and we have a team of dispatchers. It's 100% volunteer, including myself. It's all volunteer, and they'll take that call and do that intake on it, vet it out, make sure it actually qualifies for our services, which is, 90% of the time it does. It needs to be a forest road, like a off-road trail or, you know, not a county road that's maintained.
Right.
And then
you can get just a regular.
Yeah.
And then, a regular record.
If a tow truck will get to it.
Yeah, they don't need you guys yet.
Once it's a vetted call, it gets paged out to the team and we start building the team.
All right. So I've been doing a lot of, you know, wheeling the summer, and there's a lot of people who come here from Kansas, and I'm sure they don't even know that you guys exist. So let's say you're from Kansas and all of a sudden you get a flat on a Red Cone.
Yep.
How would you guys get involved in this? What would be the process?
Yeah. So one thing that we do kind of notice is social media. People will just put out like, hey, I need some help on these different Facebook pages or groups, and we get tagged in them.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's 230 or 40 of us on the team.
Wow.
And so we're on almost every off-roading Facebook page in Colorado.
Okay.
Someone will, you know, reply back to that person, like drop the phone number to the org and get it going that way. Or if you search for like off-road recovery, we should pop up in the top three or four.
What is your like phone number?
It is 720-722-1204.
So write that down, folk.
Yep.
Play this video back.
We get a lot of calls. We paged out two calls yesterday. One ran yesterday. One's running today.
Well, congratulations.
So,
my condolences to whoever got it. Hey, what's your website in case people want to check it out?
Yeah, it is www.co4x4rnr.org.
All right, so let's say that nobody, you know, gets... People don't get a hold of you on social media or your phone number. Will you ever get a call from like the sheriff's department?
Yes. So as part of the growth of the organization, when we started getting recognized, we did some pretty big blizzard deployments out east that got our name out there in that statewide resource. It's like a database that all the first responders and sheriff's departments and stuff can dive into. So they, you know, we got noticed in there. So we actually do get calls directly from sheriff's departments. Gilpin County and Clear Creek County are probably the top two. We've received some calls from Boulder County before.
Okay.
So, you know, if it's kind of, it's not really like their county SAR team qualifying, it's not like life or death.
Right.
And they don't need to indispose of their resources to potentially, you know, hamper a more important call, we'll go help them out. They'll call us directly. Sometimes we get 911 relays. that, again, don't qualify for their search and rescue team.
Are any of these life-threatening situations, or is it mainly vehicle recovery?
So we have done a few that are right on that border of like, this is like
snowstorms coming
in. Yeah, snowstorms coming in. It is very easy to get caught in Colorado near or above tree line in flash blizzards. You can't see where you're going. You just drive right off the trail. And we'll go do an extraction at that point where we'll leave your vehicle. We'll go pick you up, take you to your house, or if you're from out of state, at least a nearby hotel, and get you safe. And then we'll schedule that recovery mission for later because it's too dangerous for you to be out there. It's honestly, it's a little dangerous for us to be out there too.
So I used to ski patrol for a long time in my life. And one of our rules was always, you know, you never put the rescuers in harm's way. Or
right.
People think that, you know, you watch movies and you're like,
yeah.
But it doesn't work that way, right?
Right.
Because nothing worse than having to rescue a rescuer.
Right. And that's, you know, it is actually kind of funny that you mentioned that because we have, as part of our deployment requirements, everybody that deploys in the field needs to have a bag, like a 72-hour pack, something to sustain you for 3 days. And since we're vehicle-centric, most of us have them set up to be, like, you're going to live in your vehicle until the cavalry comes from the rest of the team to come get us unstuck. Yeah, or you can get yourself out.
Or the mountain lion gets bored of stalking you.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. But yeah, we have our own survival kits and stuff in the vehicles that roll around with us all the time. So.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. So so now we've got somebody who, like you said, you've got two, like, you're working two recoveries right now. Somebody gets a hold of you. Tell me what happens then. So how does a team consolidate, and how do you guys work this?
Yep. So being that it's all volunteer, it's not like your traditional like a county team where there's
on standby.
You're on standby. Yeah. We're not really on standby. Like everybody's got a full time job. We do have quite a few people. Excuse me, that are retired, and they can devote a tremendous amount of time to fulfilling these missions, which is just fantastic. We absolutely love our volunteers. They're great. But, you know, if you're available, I can get on a lot of the stuff that's scheduled out because then I can move my work schedule around. Anything in, you know, like Larimer County that's semi-urgent where I live, I can pretty much duck out of and get to within 45 minutes. And it doesn't really affect my work too much. But
I think there are other people that are in a similar situation
where
they're working from home and they've got their rig ready to go.
Yeah. And, you know, we can – it's not like when you call 911 and your house is on fire and the fire department's there in 4 minutes.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it can take, upwards of an hour before the team is actually built and rolling, which is why, you know, if it's a life-threatening thing, we need to pass it off to the search and rescue team.
So when you say team, how many people usually take part in a recovery?
Yeah, so it depends on the severity of the call.
Yeah.
You know, a real simple, just somebody needs winched out of a rut that they're hung up in, it might only be two people.
Okay.
We've done some really high profile, or I should say two vehicles. We've done some really kind of higher profile missions that will send, 10, 15 different vehicles. And on top of that, extra bodies to ride along with them. Just when you're working at 13,000 feet, it's exhausting.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you've got to cycle people out. You'll get them altitude sick and they just, it gets dangerous.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've sent, dozen plus, 15 plus for really big ops. We'll send in two teams. Like that first team will come in the morning, and that second team will show up after lunch and relieve the first team.
Okay. So. All right, so let's talk about some of the more interesting things you've done. How long have you been with the organization?
I joined in middle of 2017, June-ish.
Yeah, 4 years now.
Yeah, I've been about 4 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And why did you decide to join personally? What was your motivation?
Yep, so I've always been exposed to off-roading. Ever since I was a kid, we've had ATVs. Mom and Dad would take us camping. I mean, I've been in the mountains since I could ever remember. When I finally stepped up and bought a Jeep, that was about the time that the organization was growing and actually, like, it kept showing up on Facebook. So I started following it and paying attention to it and realized, this is really cool. I want to do this. And so basically when I finally decided, like, hey, let's sign up, there's, it's a dues-based organization. I mean, it's pay to play. We're credentialed with the state, background checks, everything. We have ID cards for the state, and that all covers that. But
So how much does it cost if you want to join?
Yeah, it's $150 or excuse me, it's $100 a year right now.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, it covers your – it's an extensive multi-state background check. If you've lived in multiple states, it goes, you know, all the way back.
So you want to make sure the people that you're sending out to recover are people you want to be recovered by.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you treat it – that's what gets our name out there on – as a statewide resource. Yeah. You know, we're vetted, credentialed members.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so you got vetted and then tell me about your first – let's start with the easy stuff before we get into, like, the cool and the dangerous and the unusual.
Yeah.
Tell me about your first call that you got.
So, actually, I want to say one of my first was up on Argentine Pass.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact sequence of which one was first, but it was a
– why don't you describe Argentine so people have a sense
for
what it
is. So when you go up – it's outside of Georgetown, and you go up – I think it's – Lamartine Road.
Yeah, the little like road. That
There's two that go right next to each other. Right, yeah. One's just real easy. One kind of meanders through the creek. Once you get up high enough on Argentine, you get above tree line really quickly.
And we just did a video actually on Argentine Pass where we compared a side by side to the Bronco to the TRX.
Yeah, so there's
there's nothing really difficult.
No, it's just a fun trail.
A fun trail. Yeah,
there's the McClellan side, which we've done quite a few on, and then there's the Argentine side. But there's one spot on each one of those trails that the snow tends to stay. Oh. It's just like a little bit of a glacier field looking. And that snow tends to stay. So the first one...
And we should kind of clarify, this has been a really unusual year, but unless you're snow wheeling, you usually have maybe 4 or 5 months, right? Because
the
snow comes in early and then it stays late.
Yeah. Like this is so unusual to be able to be above tree line with inches of snow instead of feet.
Basically, the snow covers the trail, and it's not like it's you're thinking of a Christmas road. It's a big.
They become very wind blown and
you lose the trail. And
one of my absolute favorite things to do is to go snow wheeling.
I know you're a big snow.
Oh yeah,
it terrifies me.
I absolutely love it. And Colorado's snow wheeling is not like it is in the Pacific Northwest. This snow does not have structure to it. It is like powdered sugar. It'd be literally like dumping a bowl of powdered sugar on the ground and then trying to stand on top of it. It's impossible. So
so you were going up to Argentine Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what, tell me about it.
So this, it was a Toyota, Toyota Tacoma. Is that the smaller one?
Yep.
Tacoma. I'm not a Toyota person, but they had tried to go across this snowfield, and it was at just about the right enough angle, about 20 to 25 degree side hill, that it threw them off the side of the road. Well, that shelf, you've been up there, that shelf is about 25 degrees for a couple thousand feet all the way to the bottom. So they had got an entire vehicle width off of the road and stopped. I mean, luckily, they didn't
keep going.
You cannot get yourself out of that situation. It is not possible. You cannot drive out of that with most vehicles. You have to have some serious tires to be able to float on top of that really loose scree that's up there. So we go up, we put a vehicle in front and two vehicles in the back, and basically we set up as a pendulum. You run the vehicle that was in front of me, I was the second one in back. Mm-hmm. The vehicle that was in front of me went up to our first car that was in front of the stuck truck, and then redirected a winch line down to the front end of that Toyota. And then I came off of the back corner of the vehicle in front of me and went to the rear of that truck. And we just winched, literally pulled him sideways back onto the road, letting him drive back and forth as we did it.
Mm.
And eventually they just come up on the road. And then you're recovered and you can drive out.
Seems simple, but Argentine from your house is probably 2 hours.
It is, yeah. Yeah. So that was my first one, and I think that was a Friday. So Fridays are typically a pretty light work day.
Yep.
And I went up there to help out with that and learned a ton just to see exactly how, you rig up something like that. And that sounds really simple, but that was like a 4-hour operation.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I'm trying to kind of show what we do there up on the board so people understand what you're doing. And how'd you feel after you did that? So when they got stuck, did they walk out or how did, So let's talk about even walking out. So at that point, to walk out of there would be probably a 3-hour walk.
Yeah, 4 hours.
I mean, it's a long way to go back down.
That was
to Georgetown.
Yeah, that was almost to the top of Argentine.
Oh God, that's even longer.
Yeah, most of the time, I want to say most people will run into someone else on the trail and they get like hitchhike their way out.
Or somebody comes and helps.
Yeah, somebody come and help them. You know, get them out. Yeah, I mean, hiking out, that happens. That happens a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, we always, you know, we invested in a sat phone a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, sat phones and those satellite, those two-way messengers.
Yeah, those are also the new, or even you know, even those emergency beacons, right, where it connects to satellite and then it like texts.
You can hit an SOS button.
SOS, and it texts, So these are devices that you guys, if you're out here wheeling, obviously, let's talk about that. So there's different forms of communication that you can have to rescue yourself, right? Yep. So obviously you said you can have a cell phone, but even though there are places in the mountains where you do have signal, there are a lot of places where you don't.
Right.
So then the next kind of cheap solution would just be a little, like a little recovery device. It's a little, it uplinks to a satellite,
right,
and you can like text a set of phone numbers that you've got pre-programmed in it to tell them, and then the little device basically gives you the coordinates of where you're at.
Yep.
Not they're not expensive. It's a monthly service.
Spot makes one. Spot, yeah. Garmin.
When I was doing a lot of dirt biking, I had a little Spot because it wasn't expensive.
Yeah. A lot of us have come to really like the Zoleo devices.
Yeah.
Because those are a two-way. I mean, the Garmin's will do two-way as well, but the Zoleo does two-way, and it just links to your phone. Like, it's literally just a box. There's no buttons on it except SOS and a power button. But it just links to your phone, and then you can actually, you don't have to have contacts built in. You can just SMS anybody.
Anybody, yeah.
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 You just type in a phone number. So.
And that's cheaper. You could also have, like, there's radios, right? But the problem with the radios is the range is limited.
Yeah.
There's family band, and then there's, like, a better band that you could use.
Yeah.
But maybe you can get a couple of miles out of that, then you're going to find somebody.
And actually, if I can touch on that a little bit, amateur radio, ham radio. We have one of probably, at least in this part of the country, one of the most robust statewide networks. Is actually two of them. One's digital, one's an analog system. That there's there's volunteers monitoring the Colorado Connection ham radio linked system here in Colorado 24 hours a day. And we've actually received some relays through ham radio. So we all have ham radios in our vehicles. It's a fantastic communication tool. A lot of times our dispatch team, you know, is down in Denver, or if someone up north where I'm at is monitoring, we can hear what's going on in Buena Vista.
Wow.
From our house in Loveland.
Yeah, so that's a lot of range.
It's pretty cool. I mean, that's not direct. That's through repeater systems and, you know, linked stuff, but it's a fantastic tool to have.
And then sat phones are, you know, I don't know how much it's, I think ours was like $500 for the phone, and then I think we pay something like $50 a month for the service.
That's pretty reasonable. I mean,
Look, if you're ever in that situation, the $500 is going to seem really cheap.
When your life is on the line, the cost really doesn't matter.
And with sat phones, they work pretty much. It's as long as you're line of sight with a satellite, and if you're in the mountains, chances are, unless you're in a gully somewhere.
Yeah, you can't be in a cave or a gully. Yeah. I mean,
you're probably going to have line of sight to a satellite.
Yeah.
All right. So that was your very first one. So talk to me about some of the more kind of interesting ones that you've done.
Yeah.
You've been doing it for a while, but you've got a list there, I see.
Yeah.
Tell me some of the ones that have been, you know, that have been noteworthy.
Yeah, so probably the most noteworthy one in my mind was up on Radical Hill. And that's just on the other side of Webster. And it was a gentleman and his dog, and they were going up that really steep shelf to get up on top where you can – I think you can either drop down to, like, St. John or
you can go over to Breckenridge. There's like three valleys there, right? You can go – there's Webster, and then there's Radical, and then you go down to Deer Creek, and then you can go to St. John's, or you can go to the back end, and you can go back to Breckenridge. So it's all kind of between – if you're not from Colorado, it's kind of between Breckenridge and Keystone.
Yeah. And he was going up that really steep shelf, and it gets really tippy, and it leans you out, and it's radical for a reason. That's probably one of the few trails that actually, at the beginning of my off-roading in a Jeep, that one really got my attention. Like,
I've never done it just for that reason. I'm too scared. I'm too scared.
That one got my heart rate up. Yeah. That was a fun one. But there's one really skinny spot as you're going up that's a little bit washed out. And if you just hug your tires to the inside of that rock, you drive right through it, no problem. He must have been too close to the edge or something. And that vehicle rolled from that upper shelf all the way down to the bottom.
Which is a long way.
It's a long way.
A couple thousand feet, yeah. Probably.
And just scattered things everywhere. And honestly, the only reason why that guy survived is he was ejected.
Yeah, that happens a lot. It happens on Black Bear Pass, too.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good place to touch upon the sports bar versus roll bar of a Wrangler. So there's a reason Jeep calls the roll bar, or what many people would consider a roll bar on their Jeep, a sports bar. And that's because it's not a roll bar.
Right. It's designed to catch you in a flop.
Yeah.
Or if you put the thing on its roof, it's designed to catch you. It is not designed to catch you rolling 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
Yeah.
It will completely smash in.
It'll pancake.
Yeah. And you have a very strong chance of not surviving that.
So I think him and his dog both got ejected, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is thankful. And actually, on Black Bear Pass recently, people have rolled, and they've also been ejected. And so,
yes.
You know, usually, this is also
that
interesting.
That Black Bear video was horrifying.
I know.
Like, holy cow.
So my dad, who is, you know, very old school, used to not wear seatbelts because his notion was that if the vehicle got in a car crash, he didn't want to be pinned in the vehicle so that he could come and rescue me and my mom, which is, you know, logically dubious, but scientifically just not right.
Right.
Because chances are if you're in a car crash and you're not wearing a seatbelt, you will go flying through the windshield and then you will suffer much more pain and damage than if you were belted in.
Yeah.
But in this situation, this is one of the rare situations where you're probably better off, especially, and let's face it, like when we did Miller Rock, your buddy had actually reinforced, you can buy reinforcements to the Jeep's sports bar to make it more of a roll bar, like a full-on race car roll bar, where if you do this thing where it tumbles down the side of a mountain, then you will be, as long as you keep your hands in the vehicle, you should be okay.
Yep,
or more or less. Yeah.
And the redesign of the Jeep from the JKs to the JLs, that sport bar is actually a little bit stronger because that reinforcement kit that people like to put in their JKs, it is substantially different on the JLs.
Mm.
So that windshield frame assembly is a little more strong, but it's still not rated for a multi-rollover impact.
Yeah, and the difference is there's a famous video. There was a famous video where, was it a BMW? I forget what the car was. They were running Pike's Peak Hill Climb, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they went flying. I mean, they just go flying off the road. And then, you know, this incredible sequence of tumbles happens where they're just tumbling. And you think, these people are going to die. And then the vehicle eventually comes to a stop. And, like, the doors pop open. The guys walk out. And they're kind of like, what the heck was that?
Right.
Now, that's a roll bar.
That's a full-on, welded-in cage.
Yeah.
To the frame.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what the Jeep has.
No, that's not what a Jeep has.
All right, so this guy rolled the Jeep, and now you've got a situation where I take it by the time you had gotten there, he had been.
Oh,
he survived.
Yes, yeah.
I should say that he and the dog actually came trotting into town eventually.
So I think I think on that one the dog actually stayed with him.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. There's a second one that I was not on that we can talk about where the dog was ultimately found. But on that Radical Hill one, I mean we had to drag that thing out like it was completely not able to roll.
Yeah. So the guy's gone at this point. He's in the hospital. So now you guys get called in and you've got this Jeep in the middle of nowhere that has been completely crushed to some extent.
Yeah.
So what happens then?
Yeah. So luckily this is up above tree line again. And luckily the train worked in our favor because it happened on some switchbacks.
Yeah.
So we took one of our trucks and parked a truck up on top and had a winch line down to it. So we could actually drag the vehicle up closer to the shelf road on that switchback section. And then when we got it basically up there, and like, this sounds super easy, but again, this was like a 6-hour operation. We drug that thing up to the road and then we had one vehicle on each side of it and we just pivoted that thing around and got it to a point to where it was actually pointed downhill on the trail. And then we proceeded to, literally, we had to drag it down about a quarter of a mile by absolute brute force because it had like one functioning tire.
Wow.
So, I mean, everything was flat. the suspension was torn off of it. We had to rebuild parts of the suspension. We had shops and folks donating like springs, anything. Just, we didn't care if it was the right length or anything because we just needed it to roll.
Because otherwise you're going to have a Jeep that's, you know, cluttering up this pristine mountain alpine terrain.
Yep. And they have to come out. Like everybody says, oh, just leave it. No, I mean, they need to come out.
Yeah, for sure.
There's oil in the engine, there's coolant, there's gas, you know. Yeah. It's got to come out. So we go in and get it.
All right. And then, obviously, you're not involved in, like, the insurance afterwards, right?
No.
You just drop it off and then it goes to wherever the
right. Yeah, and usually, you know, the insurance company's got a tow truck arranged. I've not ever heard of, like, an insurance company denying claims. I don't know if that's happened, but I mean, I know at least on that one, the insurance company was working with that gentleman. That was a very viral nationwide. I think I even got worldwide coverage on that one because that was pretty severe.
Is there a video somewhere of this?
There is. Yeah. It's on YouTube. Okay. It's just like Radical Hill Rollover.
Okay. And you have your own YouTube channel. What's your YouTube channel?
It's literally just my name, Justin King.
Okay. And then what's up there if people want to go check stuff out?
It's everything. Yeah. I mean, I have everything up there. It's personal off-roading trips. It's some camping stuff. Okay. There's it goes way back, you know, 15 years. So there's a little bit of everything, but it is very off-road centric in the last like 7 years probably.
All right, let's talk about some more recoveries. So what's another one that you want to kind of
tell me so about? This one I was not on.
Yeah.
But it happened outside of Buena Vista on Iron Chest. And this one was sadly it was a fatal. There was a huge boulder in the middle of the trail that was an obstacle. You had to either, you know, drive around, or, you know, if you had this skinny enough vehicle, you could go on the inside. I've never done Iron Chest. It's a trail I've not driven. I've only been to Buena Vista twice. But I really wanted to get on this mission, and I just couldn't. It was one of those work balance things.
It's probably 3 hours from where we're at. Yeah. It's a ways.
It takes me about 3.5 if traffic's cooperating to get there. So that was a fatal. And that vehicle, as that was rolling, that person also was ejected. I don't know if they had a seatbelt on or not, if they just slipped out of it. But they were basically crushed by that vehicle as it rolled by. And the dog was also ejected from the vehicle. So after, you know, that we're not involved at that point. That's way above the seriousness of, you know, that's of a death. So after all that was dealt with, that vehicle was so far down, like you could hardly see it. It was so far off the trail. I believe it was CORE, Colorado Off-Road Enterprise. And I could be misspeaking on this, but I think it was also State of Trail. Went up there and helped remove that great big boulder that was in the way.
So they moved the boulder, actually.
Yeah. Wow. And also while they were up there, they set some anchors specifically just for this recovery. They drilled anchors into the huge, you know, it's slab of basically bedrock. It was an immovable boulder. And they set some anchors so that way we could go up there. And that wasn't just us. There was multiple organizations involved in getting that vehicle recovered because it was thousands of feet of rope to go, you know, to the rock and down, you know, with multiple vehicles sharing that load, dragging it all the way up the hill. But when that vehicle was being recovered, you know, just the amount of resources and stuff that were on that trail, we actually had to close it. So we had the Forest Service involved. You know, State of the Trail again helps us close trails when we need to temporarily to get a vehicle out, because we don't want to have someone in there ahead of us and then get stuck, like, on a one-way in, one-way out. You don't want them to get stuck up there for 12 hours. As soon as we have everything rigged.
So how long did that recovery take?
That was all day. I mean, I want to say they were on scene by, like, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and they were rolling out of there after dark.
Yeah.
In the summertime.
Yeah.
So, you know, sun sets at 9-something here in the summertime. So.
So let's talk about kind of just from, you know, a recovery perspective. Between the two most famous rollovers that happened here recently, so I think 2 years ago, and they were both on Black Bear Pass, right? 2 years ago, we had a Jeep that went rolling off of Black Bear Pass. So let's talk about what Black River Pass is, which is a shelf road. And I got to tell you, I hate shelf roads because while it's not difficult, there's you know, there's different kinds of off-roading, right? There's rock crawling. Most off-roading is just dirt road. But a shelf road is a dirt road on the side of a mountain that usually, you know, if you get it wrong, you will roll off the mountain.
Yeah, shelf road driving can be literally as smooth as the asphalt roads you drive on in town. But if you take your eyes off of that road and don't respect it for a few seconds, you can drive right off of it if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, so the two incidents I'm talking about, there was a video a couple of years ago that went viral where you see somebody who had like a dash cam rolling, and then this Jeep just comes flying down the mountain.
Yeah.
Rolling. That was a Wrangler, I think, where where the parking brake.
Yeah, I want to say, if I remember correctly on that, it was a manual. Yeah. And the parking brake either wasn't set fully or maybe just over, like, I mean, mine, you know, you have to adjust them. Maybe it was just a little bit out of adjustment.
And the vehicle and rolled off the road.
It rolled.
And then the latest one this year, which happened this year, was a Bronco Sport, where there were people who were going, there's like a wedding venue up there, and they were going up.
Yeah.
You can go up. It's a one-way road about halfway up the mountain. And they figured out that they had gone past the one-way part of the road, and then they were trying to turn around. And in the process of turning around, the Bronco Sport, once again, went too far, went off, and then rolled down the hill. Actually, I was looking at the pictures, and it actually stuck together pretty well. I was amazed at how well the actual structure of the vehicle held up.
Yeah, that incident floated around our team, our little internal use members page. And you could tell that it looked like it said Bronco. It was like, but that's too small to be the full size Bronco. And that, you know, then the story, you know, started coming out. It was like, it was a Bronco Sport. That really held together good. So,
you know, the thing I've learned over the years is that I used to think when I first came to Colorado that when you're kind of wheeling, right, it goes from like there's warnings, like it goes from being, you know, just a nice road to it gets harder, and eventually you hit some obstacle and you're like, you have choices. But oftentimes that's not how it happens, right? Either because of the weather conditions where a storm rolls in and it changes like that, or because of the off-road conditions.
Right.
It just goes from like a Sunday drive to like, I am terrified to I am way over my head. So what would you tell people who are first coming here so that they don't have to call your services? What are some great tips that you could pass along?
Yeah, you know, don't ever exceed your comfort level and your limit. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to get stuck to understand that limit. But you can also tell. I was out just, you know, personally myself, and I'll go out solo, messing around. And I was up Red Feather Lakes right at the end of November before they started shutting gates and stuff. And again, I love snow bashing. I was up on a trail that shouldn't be accessible this time of year, and I wanted to go down a little bit further to a camping spot that I'd been to. And I came up on one of those Colorado snowdrifts that has about 4 inches of ice on top and powdered sugar on the bottom. So, you know, it was one of those, like, in my head, like, I have everything with me. I had chains. I've got recovery gear. I've got recovery gear for days in that Jeep. I turned around. I mean, I've gone out to get myself stuck like that, and I didn't want to spend the 3 hours getting myself unstuck alone.
It's
the same thing when you go out and you're venturing out, you're doing some exploring here from out of state. We've recovered a lot of rental vehicles that they're going out, and it's a normal flat road, and they get on this time of year, you get onto that north slope, and there's 2 inches of snow on the ground, but it is a solid sheet of ice underneath of it, and whoop, right off the road it goes. So, you know, we'll go up and we'll pull vehicles back onto the roads. Just don't push it. Don't exceed your comfort level, because your sixth sense is usually right. If you were thinking in your head,
that little spidey sense going off, this is probably a little sketchy.
Shouldn't do this.
It is sketchy.
Then you probably shouldn't do it, because if you're by yourself, it can get pretty dangerous pretty quick. When you get your vehicle stuck, like if you've got a half tank of gas or less, and you get your vehicle stuck at the right angle, that fuel pump's sucking air. You have a half tank of gas. Your fuel pump is sucking air, so you can't run the engine. And a lot of people don't think about that.
Good point.
And we've run into that a lot. I mean, we'll take like 3 gallons of gas up there and the thing fires right up. Yeah. And as soon as you get it back on the flat, they have a half tank of gas again.
Yeah, there's that saying, what's the world's fastest vehicle? It's a rental car. But in this case, a rented Jeep is probably not the world's most accomplished Jeep. Even though the owner might think so. So, hey, are the people you rescue when they're there, are they grateful? What are their responses?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes there's a steep level of embarrassment. And would tell every single person, especially the ones that I've been on, like, there's no reason to be embarrassed about this. Like, we've all done it. Literally, some of the folks on our team are hunters that have been out in hunting season. They've been stuck. And we'll go recover them, then they become members. And you know, it's like that way of giving back. But yeah, usually, you know, everybody's just ecstatic and grateful for the help to get their vehicle back, get their property back.
So do you see people that maybe are overconfident in their rigs or their ability, or is it just the circumstances? How do most of these people get into these situations? What's been your expertise?
Yeah, some of it's sometimes it's mechanical.
Okay.
You blow a drive shaft, and it's really hard to limp a vehicle out in
two-wheel drive.
Whether it's if you break your rear drive shaft, you know, and you're running out on front-wheel drive, it's just hard. Vehicles need four-wheel drive on some of this terrain to get themselves through stuff. Sometimes it's freak accidents. We did a rollover. I went on this one, Old Flowers Road, west of Fort Collins. That's a nothing trail. There's just one really steep section. It's a beautiful drive in the fall. I want to say it was a manual transmission, and I want to say the gal said that she either slipped off the clutch or it wasn't – she either didn't have any gear, something to that effect, and – in 2 seconds, that vehicle rolled backwards at just a little bit of an angle, caught the upward edge of the trail, and just flopped it in like 2 seconds. It just freak accident. So, and sometimes it's folks that are blatantly, intentionally pushing the envelope a little bit too far, which complicates it for us because we have to be able to get in there too. There's been some vehicles that have sat all winter.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, have you left vehicles out there all winter?
Yeah, there's been some times that's happened. Kingston Peak is probably one of the more noted incidents that happened. And I want to say that was the winter of 17.
Yeah.
Because I was actually down at the Air Force Academy with a Boy Scout troop.
Okay.
And the phone was going off. Like, it was page. And there was some folks that had gone up on Kingston. And they had dropped down, again, above tree line. And they had dropped down and got into snow that felt structural. And then they buried it. And then our team went up there to get them, and we buried it. So then when that happens, you know, we roll everybody. I mean, anybody that's available and can respond.
So when you guys get stuck, it's all hands on
board. It's all hands on. And that does not happen very often. Yeah. It has happened. Yeah. I mean, it's probably happened 5 or 6 times that I can think of. But as many people as possible go. And, like, there was a very legitimate risk that even our own team members' vehicles were going to sit all winter on that one because that's how stuck they were. And we did get everybody out, luckily. But, I mean, there was multiple vehicles on Kingston that year after that fact that sat all winter. And
did they start in the spring?
Some of them did. Some of them did not because rodents.
Oh, started bunching on the
love
wires.
That soy-covered wiring that we use on our vehicles. Yeah. So some of them did not start up. But, I mean, you know, by then the snow's gone. You just hook them up and flat tow them out. So
let's say you're coming to Colorado and you're going to want to go wheeling. Is there anything you'd recommend that people bring with them? Is there like a list of things that you could say this is something you might want to consider? Because look,
sure,
it's like even if we get a lot of emails from people saying, hey, I'm coming to Colorado, I want to go wheeling, where should we go? Right? And even if you pick something relatively straightforward, like the Switzerland Trail, mm-hmm. which is an old train trestle that goes from Boulder up to Nederland.
We've done rollovers on that one.
Exactly.
It can happen anywhere.
Yeah. What's so terrifying. It goes from like a Sunday drive to oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yes. Very quickly. That's how quick it happens. You know, for something to bring with, it's kind of season dependent too. this time of year.
Don't say beer.
No. You really shouldn't be doing
that. A fine fall ale.
Yeah. Don't be drinking and driving. We've had that happen too. That gets
to pair with your Jeep.
Yeah, that gets exciting quick. But
a winter wheat. Yeah,
whatever the seasonal lager is. You know, bring if it's winter time, you should have a little extra, like, I would say, winter kit in your vehicle. Kitty litter is a great traction aid, just to get you, like, sometimes all you need is just that little bit of momentum to get you through.
So my friend Matt imports MaxTrax, so
yes,
you don't have to have MaxTrax, you can just get a kitty.
Those are great too. Like that literally is one of the things that is extremely popular in recoveries. It actually works really good to protect your winch lines when you're pulling over. If you're coming up, like, and onto over, the road,
yeah,
and
if you have some synthetic rope, yeah, it's not going to tear
you
it
can
up.
Put you can stack a couple of those together and run them down the grooves in there.
Yeah,
and
interesting.
It helps. You're not, your winch isn't coming in fast enough to burn it. So you really don't risk, like, chewing a hole right through your MaxTrax. But, you know, extra clothing, even just the simplest amount of recovery gear. A tree strap with a shackle and a winch. Like, if you're going to off-road, you should have a winch. You can get yourself out of 90% of the things that you can get yourself into with a winch. And one tree strap and a shackle. And don't just wrap the winch line around the tree. You'll kill the tree. Or you'll break your winch line.
It's funny. You know, like, there are, like, two things that are ubiquitous to off-roading, right? A winch and a snorkel.
Yeah.
So are you saying the more important of those two is the winch?
The winch is definitely – like, there's that old saying of, like, lockers before light bars.
Yeah.
But if you're out at night, like, the amount of lights that we have on some of our vehicles is very nice. But winches, that is easily the number one tool.
Yeah, and you know, they come in all prices. You know, we've worked with Warren, obviously, because that's a partner of ours. But you can get them. You can go to Harbor Freight.
Yeah,
a winch can be expensive. Let's face it, a nice Warren winch with a synthetic cable can be easily over $1,000.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And then that's not including, of course, the bumper that you're going to need, the winch ready bumper to put it on.
Yep. And you know, it's kind of funny you mentioned Warren. I kind of want to throw this out there. We have a pretty rigorous training curriculum that we follow. So we know how to calculate our loads, and we know, you know, what our gear is rated to and what forces we can put on that gear with no risk. But I mean, there's still safety zones. Like, you shouldn't be standing anywhere near that winch line when it's operating. Warren doesn't rate their winch lines that come on their winches.
The new ones, the synthetic ones, you mean?
Yeah. So they won't tell you what its breaking strength is. Like, it's perfectly, like, you can use it. If you have a 12,000 pound winch, you can put 12,000 pounds on that line. But you don't know how much more. Mm. So when we get into some of these more complex riggings that we do, we can actually rig up ways to double and triple that force going through that line.
And then the problem doesn't become the winch weight factor. It becomes the point at which the cable snaps.
Right, when that rope snaps. And, or the cable, if you're running a cabled winch. Yeah. Those are really dangerous when they snap. So that stuff flings everywhere. And
yeah, luckily, I think most, unless you have really old school, most people are going. Even like the budget winches now don't use
a lot
the
of
cable.
The stuff's coming with synthetics. Yeah.
And the problem with synthetics, of course, is if you leave it in the sun too long, it starts to degrade.
Yeah, you really should keep that protected. I run a winch cover on the front of my Jeep.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of laughs at that, but it's like that. You should see how – well, you might have seen how faded and just chewed up that winch cover is. I park my Jeep in the garage, so that's only seen the sun exposure for when I'm out.
That's crazy, I know.
And it's all just destroyed after 4 years. So that would have been my winch line if it wasn't covered. So –
what's the most fun you've had on a recovery?
Oh, I mean – the snow.
Yeah.
It was highly embarrassing. I'll share the story anyway. I had just purchased that Power Wagon that I'm driving.
Okay.
And I took it up to Red Feather to get on a snow recovery. It was a Jeep back in a little bit south of Red Feather, and it was hung up in the snow. I proceeded to get myself stuck like 7 times in a row trying to get to that vehicle because every time I'd get that truck, we'd have to go over those great big old snow drifts. I mean, I was hitting these things at some speed. And it was like hitting a brick wall. That snow was grabbing onto the frame of the truck, and it was just bringing me to a complete stop. and the tires couldn't make contact with the ground.
And then you're high-centered
and spinning. And this is what makes it like extra embarrassing is that vehicle did sit for a few days before we went and got it. We drove him right out.
Yeah.
We had to recover myself like seven different times. So, then, you know.
So the rescuer got recovered more than the rescuee. Yeah.
But, you know, I will say, like, of the missions that are not, you know, the really serious, like people were seriously injured, they're all fun.
Okay.
You're out, you know, you're having a good time, great people. And it's just a good time. We all work very well together. We all have the same training.
So before we wrap this up, let's talk about kind of the rigs that you guys have. So you yourself have a Wrangler with a 3-inch lift, 2-inch lift?
That 2-inch lift, yep.
Yeah, and on 35s.
And, yep, 35s.
And then you've got, obviously, you just said a Power Wagon.
Yep, and I put that on 35s. There's no lift required. You just slap them on.
Which one is better?
So that depends. Suppose, it depends. Right? Yeah, it depends. If you need that kind of oomph and that pulling power, Power Wagon.
Yeah.
That thing is really planted off-road. It's so heavy. It's planted. Like, I'll take that up. Kelly Flats is one I want to get you guys up sometime.
Yeah.
And I'll take the Power Wagon up that, take the hardest lines, doesn't freak me out at all. Take the Jeep up that. That trail still gets my attention, and I've done that trail 20 times.
Yeah.
Easily.
Okay. What are some of the other rigs that the people, you know, that also volunteer have? So
yeah, it's a mixture. I mean,
is it, you know, pickup trucks? Is it all sorts?
We've got F-150s, you know, normal F-150s. We've got F-150 Raptors. There's Toyota Tacomas, anything full size. We've got Ford Super Duty diesels, Power Wagons. We got Jeeps, anything from TJs to JKs to JLs.
You've got a deposit on a Bronco, I hear.
I do, yep. Yeah. I do have a deposit on a Bronco. I actually emailed the dealership asking if they heard anything, and they said no. So I'm going to have to play the waiting game. But And actually, since you mentioned the Bronco, we do have a member that has a Bronco.
There you go. Somebody's
just got it. Got it. So, yeah. I mean, we have literally everything.
And does one vehicle or type work better than the other, or does it depend on the recovery?
They're all within that same, like if you have a full-size truck, they're all within the same amount of weight. So if we need the weight of a truck to do pulling, we ask for the trucks. If it's just a Jeep that's stuck, anything. You know, the Toyotas, the lighter weight SUVs, the Jeeps, the Toyotas, that stuff, that can recover that stuff real easy.
And the great thing is this is all free to the...
It's all free, 100%. Yeah. There's no bill, there's no invoice. You know, it's an entirely donation-based system.
You know, we did a story that we took a lot of grief on that you told me about another, I'm not going to name names, but it's another YouTuber who does a very popular video. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, you know, just do it for free. Do the videos. That would you pay for the recovery, and then you would have no issues. Right. I think it's great that you guys are out there, you know, volunteering your time and doing this as a community service. So if people want to go to your website, what is it again?
Yeah, so www.co4x4rnr.org.
And are you still looking for volunteers?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, we've got people that come on every month.
All right. What's your personal website?
I do not have a personal website.
Your personal YouTube channel?
Yeah, just my name, Justin King.
Yeah.
And then the org has an official YouTube channel. You just search that, Colorado 4x4 Rescue and Recovery.
Is there like a Facebook page too?
Yep. And it's, you know, again, Colorado 4x4 Rescue and Recovery. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. And I think that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And then if you guys are looking, a couple of years ago, we did a build for a TJ, and then we sold it, and we donated the money to you guys.
I remember that.
So if you guys are looking for a great charity or a nonprofit that you want to donate to, I couldn't recommend a better one.
Yep.
You know, and so I think with that money, you guys bought some radios. I'm sure there's always use for additional funds.
We're always looking for ways to help out the membership. We have, I'm not exactly sure when we're going to do this, but we usually have an annual members banquet.
The whole
COVID thing is, it depends on where we try and hold it.
Of course,
So, you know, we usually have a membership banquet where there's just lots of door prizes. And we've got sponsors that donate stuff for that. And even members will donate stuff for that. So we've had folks, you know, donate winch lines and straps. And we actually had Super Winch, I think it was Super Winch, donated a winch, like a full-on 18,000-pound rated winch, and so that got given away. You know, it's fun.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you very much for taking the time to share some of these recovery stories with us. And thank you guys for taking the time to listen to this podcast or watch it if you're on YouTube. And remember, check out tfl-studios.com, where we put all of our news, views, and of course reviews all in one place. So if you want to see like the trip we had, the fun day we had at Miller Rock. That's a place where you could get that. Or, yeah, it's all in one place. All right, see you guys next time. Ciao.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.